Today's program is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin is home to the nation's only Master Cheesemakers program that provides innovative cheesemakers with continuing education opportunities? To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Greg Blaze. My guest today has been on the show four times over the past 7 years and has worn many hats throughout her career in the cheese industry. We're excited to welcome her back today as an official member of the Cutting the Curd team. She's our new producer, and she'll be hosting the show once a month as well. Elena Santigate, welcome to Cutting the Curd.
Thanks, Craig. Happy to be here, as always.
Yeah. Your first appearance on the show was back in 2011 as a hobbyist urban cheesemaker, and you last came on air just about a year ago to talk about your recently published book on home cheesemaking. You have come around full circle.
It's true. It's kind of crazy. Life is cyclical in that way.
It is. And as we bring in a new producer and a sometimes host, I wanted to take a second to thank my friend Emily Acosta for helping me out so much. I can honestly say that when Anne turned over the hosting regularly of the show to me, the first call I made was to Emily for her help. And I can honestly say that if I didn't get that help, there wouldn't be a Cutting the Curd today. So we really, really, really appreciate your work and we miss you.
Yeah, Emily did an amazing job. Yeah. Great friend.
But here we are. Let's start from the beginning. How did you get into cheese, Elena?
Oh, the cheese origin story. You know, I feel like so many people in the cheese industry can't point to one exact moment. But there always are a few aha moments. And for me, you know, I grew up in New York City. I grew up going to Zabar's, Fairway, you know, living amidst the greats. The cheese, you know, the sort of olfactory training of my childhood was pretty strong.
Sure.
And my family was from Wisconsin, so I kind of had that in my roots too. But I mean, for me, cheese was always something really interesting. I got more and more into it when I lived in New York after college, and I would bop around town kind of exploring cheese shops and tasting cheese everywhere. And eventually, I started making cheese as a way to learn more about it. Not really as a way to make excellent cheese, because that's really hard.
Yes. Yeah, it is.
but it is a great way to understand a product that you feel like you've kind of, okay, I've tasted all this cheese, I'm talking to all these cheesemongers, what's next? So I made cheese for a while and sort of prolonged that for a good amount of time. And I was eventually sort of convinced to jump in wholeheartedly by a retailer friend of mine.
Who's that?
Sergio Hernandez.
Sure,
who
sure.
Ran Brooklyn Larder back when they opened and yeah. for many years.
How'd you make that leap from, a hobby cheesemaker to a cheesemonger?
Yeah, it was really interesting. You know, Sergio, I was a regular at that shop. Uh-huh. I loved Brooklyn Larder. And I would bring Sergio my cheeses to taste and get his feedback and kind of tell sure. him about what little creations I was making at home. And mostly I was tasting the cheese that they sold, which uh-huh. is, you know, they have had an incredible selection since they've opened. And Sergio finally said to me, like, what are you doing? You're so passionate. You're so into this. Come work for me. Try it out.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes you just need somebody to nudge you into, you know, I'd been dancing around the idea for so long. And so I started working nights and weekends just to try out. I had the sense to know, hey, I love cheese.
Right.
It's fun to make cheese, but retailing might be a whole different ballpark.
Which it is.
Which it totally is. So I tried it out for a few months and I wound up loving it. And then I jumped in full time.
Well, it's funny. You had a real established role at a local sort of a nonprofit, correct? When you came in, so Did you take a pay cut to take your job at the cheese counter?
Good question. I love this question. Boy, did I take a pay cut.
Yeah.
You know,
because that's what invariably happens to people who come in and end up working retail for the first time after being established as a, you know,
in a real job.
Yeah, as like a legitimate human being, you know, as opposed to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big factor in the decision, you know, and luckily I had enough flexibility and I had enough savings. Yeah, you got to have some savings.
Sure.
And, you know, I think it's a really interesting topic of how do we survive in this industry and financially and make it work.
Well, you know, the thing is, I've been a cheesemonger in New York City for a long time.
Right.
I moved here and became a cheesemonger, which is even more difficult now. See, you have home court advantage. This is where
That's
you grew
true.
Up.
That
so
is
you
true.
Have family. You can't really get kicked out of the city. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
you're from
true.
Here. So it would be nice if more people followed that path.
Right.
But I think that you need a lot of times... It's survival of the fittest. And,
totally.
And you get a lot of really intelligent people working at the cheese counter and driven people, but they always marginalize out after a certain amount of time,
right.
Especially in New York City, as you know, because they have to pay their fucking rent.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
nuts. I mean, for me, it was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm giving up my one-bedroom apartment and I'm going to have a roommate.
Right.
So that was number one. Like, mm-hmm. I thought to myself, how do I cut my expenses down so that this could be doable? And I gave myself like 1 year to see how it went
right.
and try to make more.
Sure.
So that was key. And that was a big driving force. But the other thing was, as you know, Greg, I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved working the counter. And so when you fall for a job like that, it's like, you know, you'll do anything. And I really did. It was amazing how quickly I changed kind of my cost of living.
Oh, yeah. You made some adjustments.
Yeah.
Did it bother you to be sort of the lower part of the totem pole? Did you have to make an adjustment to, you know, taking orders from people, working in a retail environment where even though you were in a good one, mm-hmm. like Brooklyn Larder,
right.
you're still going to run into some people there that you have to respect without maybe...
Right,
really
it's
thinking
a hierarchy.
They're not full of shit, and like, you know, you have to go through all of that, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was definitely. I was ready to learn. That was the good
right.
thing. You know, you come into it, you're humble.
Humbled.
I think that
yeah.
you have to, without a humble spirit. I don't know
you're
what you.
Kind of screwed.
Would, yeah, I don't know how it would go. It wouldn't go very long.
No, and I've seen it unfortunately go that way.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, it was like I had everything to learn,
yeah.
and there was an amazing crew. The management group at
That's
Brooklyn Larder was incredible.
Timing is key.
Timing was huge, and so there was actually like a group of four managers at the time, and they all had kind of come out of early Murray's days.
Sure.
It was a really interesting group
it's different
of
culture,
people. Totally. And then. They were also really tight on the operations. So I got to learn.
You had to be. You didn't have this sort of corporate structure above you that
right.
pretended to have all the numbers worked out.
Exactly.
You actually had to pay for all of the napkins you used and
right.
all of the plastic wrap you wasted. And
exactly.
Every like millimeter worth of product that you throw in the trash, you count.
Exactly.
And that's a different way to learn.
Big time. And learning from scarcity in the food industry is big.
Huge.
You know, then after I worked at Larder, I went and was the lead cheesemonger and buyer at Beecher's in Manhattan. And it, like the theme of like learning from a tight operation continued there because there we actually had, you know, they had just opened a few months earlier and business was okay, but it wasn't like booming on the cheese retail side.
Yeah.
So there I really had to learn how to keep the cheese in good shape. And sell more of it.
That's a big skill.
But we had to
keep enough
cheese.
Of it out there so that you look like you're in business.
Exactly.
Well, it becomes a tipping point. You learn all of that.
Yeah.
And you also find out who you are and you can't be who you're not.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you may work for a person that says, I need a massive display of cheese like Greg has at Eataly, but we, you know, you sell a third of the amount of product.
It makes no sense.
No sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
Beecher's an interesting counter. I took great pleasure in taking several employees from that place.
Yes, I remember that was a hobby.
Most of
yours.
Them still work for me. Yeah.
It's interesting.
Insane. Chris Napick, good guy. Andrew Torrance works with us.
Huh.
Great cheesemaker.
I think Coulter was the first one to jump to Eataly. If you're listening, Coulter, we missed you at Beecher's.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah.
That's a tough gig, though.
It was the really cool thing about it for me also was that it was an all-American selection.
Sure.
And early on in my cheese sort of literacy, as I was really learning, that like focus and that sort of spectrum of options was perfect because I got to focus in on American cheesemakers and learn about the international classics, but through the lens of what was happening here in the U.S. And that was really, that was really fun.
And you learned from the retail. So you changed gears in your career and changed the hats, but you started at the retail counter. So it made it easier for you in a real way, in a good way, and this is why I enjoyed to do business with you when you were working with the cheesemakers, because you know what reality is.
Right.
You can't, I don't think you can start, unless you are, let's say your family owns an importing business, Adam, Adam doesn't have to work at the cheese counter. He understands the different part of the business, and it's his part that he does.
Yeah.
But I don't think that some people can start out as a sales rep and never really have the credibility with the cheesemongers as if you go the other way around. And I was wondering, did you find that to be true?
Completely. I mean, so after doing retail, after Beecher's, I went and opened one more. I opened a Campbell Cheese and Grocery here in
Brooklyn. Nice store.
Great store. Beautiful store.
Sure.
And a totally fun and pretty amazing project opening that one. But then you're right. From there, I jumped over to the producer side. And I took a little bit of a break from retail. And having been a buyer and a retailer and opened a store from soup to nuts, it was like a huge leg up. I felt that experience completely informed me on the sales side and on the producer side, especially as at that point the producer I was working for was smaller, hadn't really been in the New York City market.
Right.
And so being able to really paint the picture for them of what they're dealing with, who they're trying to sell to, and what their lives were like was huge.
And an interesting thing, and why you and I become friends and why it's easy for us to work together. So for myself, I run a retail store now, but I've also done all of the other jobs. I've never been a cheesemaker, but I've matured cheese and I understand the processes. And when I talk to you, I know you've actually worked all the jobs, so you're not really trying to sell me anything.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm trying to solve a problem.
Right. You're in it all the way.
Right. I see all sides of that equation.
But I feel like sometimes people, they don't, I think you would probably agree, and one of the reasons why I enjoy to host the show here to do this, and why I think you will, is because my ability to relate to the different kinds of people that come on the show isn't fabricated as yours is. You know what it means to make cheese,
right?
And to mature cheese,
right?
That's I know for me, for doing Cutting the Curd, I was able to learn so much, but because I had knew a little part of the other, because I had that kind of experience, it was easier for me to relate to the people I was talking to.
It makes sense. And it's interesting when I think about listening to this radio show over the years and when I think about the newer people that I see jumping into the cheese industry, I do think, working for a producer and working as a retailer are two great first steps in a career.
Sure.
I think you could start at either one of those, and if you jump to the other, one would inform the other in a cool way.
Well, yeah, your hands are with the products either way.
And then, jumping in on the sales side or doing, distribution or importing and being more on the business end in that way, then you're so far ahead in terms of your understanding of how to get that job done and what your customers are looking for. But you're right that if you had started on that side, I think it would be trickier.
I just don't think it works that way.
Yeah.
In my experience, tells me.
Or it's more of a learning curve.
Sure. Either way, I just know how I am and how I relate to the people in my world.
Yeah.
And anybody who's putting their time behind the counter is someone that I immediately trust more than people who aren't, who haven't.
Yeah.
Or someone who says, I'm a cheesemaker,
Right. Totally.
You also, some of our listeners may know this, some may not, that you organize a group called Women in Cheese.
Uh-huh.
What's that all about?
Yeah, you do know what it's all about. You were at an early brainstorming session, if I remember clearly.
I was the one and only woman in cheese.
He was the one and only man present at a Woman in Cheese event.
That was a good time.
It was. Yeah, Women in Cheese. I mean, this year, what? This is the... now, see,
how many people
you
got?
I should have done a fact check before I came on, because now I'm going to... I want to say this is the beginning of the fifth year.
That's fantastic.
Yes, it's really exciting. And it's, you know, Women in Cheese is just a loose group. It's a sort of a casual group of women who work in the cheese industry in any way. And we get together in person. It's an in-person gathering, sort of.
The networking thing?
Yeah, I mean, that word networking seems like sounds so corporate. But I think, but listen, I think women
is it a place where you get hammered and talk shit about people?
No, not as much as you might think. Not as much as you might think.
Every club that I'm a member of is exactly
that's the agenda. You know,
that's not gender specific.
I will say that Women in Cheese, there's always great food and beverage
right
at Women in Cheese. We gather every, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, or, you know, busier times of the year, maybe every 2 months.
Uh-huh.
And we just get together in person and connect. And that's really all it has been, with the addition of now we do a yearly karaoke at ACS.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yes, 2018 will be our third annual karaoke at ACS.
Got to find a karaoke bar in Pittsburgh.
I know, or if anybody has got a lead on that, let me know.
There you go.
The Women in Cheese will show up in numbers for that one.
Sure. So we're going to take a short break, but then we're going to come back and do a little bit more radio with Elena.
Today's program was brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. What do you think of when you hear Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh, and squeaky cheese curds, or deep-fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Uplands Cheese, the Farmstead Cheese Company behind Pleasant Ridge Reserve. I think of delicious, stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think of Dunbarton Blue, made by master cheesemaker Chris Raleigh. I think of Ross Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Championship Cheese, and Satori's Black Pepper Bellavitano, the 2017 U.S. Championship Cheese. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, with lush grasslands and a glacial water supply that produce the very best milk. Fourth-generation cheesemakers combine old-world tradition with new ideas and the highest standards to make innovative cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Greg Blaze, with new Cutting the Curd producer and soon-to-be monthly host, Elena Santigade. We're getting to know Elena today, but some of us already do. And we're going to, you know, make her talk more as she jumps into her new role on our little radio team.
Got to get used to the microphone.
Yeah. On the second half of the episode, I'd like to get meta for a minute, although I don't know what that even means.
Very cool word, right?
talk about radio on the radio. I do a lot of thinking about the purpose of the show, about what it brings to our listeners' lives, and I think about who our listeners are and what we can help them with. And I also, I learn a lot by doing the show, which is awesome. And it's free learning for me.
Yeah.
So I wanted you to tell me a little bit about what brings you to radio as a medium and why specifically a radio show about cheese.
Good. I feel like we are going through a complete renaissance. Is it even a renaissance? It might just be an explosion of radio. The podcast world is insane.
They're everywhere.
It's insane. I don't want to sleep. I want to listen to podcasts all night.
Absolutely.
So I feel like it's really exciting in the sense that there's so many great shows and every topic is up for debate. And cheese, you know, the thing, I think you'll relate to this, Greg.
Oh, yeah?
Part of why we love cheese, I mean, it's delicious, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, but to take that even further, there is no limit to the talking and the thinking and the learning that you can do about everything surrounding cheese.
Sure.
Cheese in and of itself is this product that you can look at, you can touch, you taste it, you can smell it. But what it represents is cultural history, right? Geography, you know, every kind of period of human existence.
Yeah, you can, I agree.
Trace to some dairy product, and that's an insane.
A food is important.
Yeah,
and cheese is an interesting food item. That it's one of the very, very, very minimal amount of food items that appreciates in value over time, yeah. Which I find to be fascinating.
Yeah, the economic part of it is so amazing.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it stops time, mm-hmm. Which I also find to be really interesting. It's currency.
What do you mean by that it stops time?
Well, if you take a look at matured cheese, like a Parmigiano, it's 3 years, mm-hmm. 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That's where you were.
Right. It's almost time traveling.
Sure.
Yeah.
Where it slows down the clock.
Right.
Really to me, cool. It does.
Totally. Totally does.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with all of those things. Those those are definitely what brought me to do this for as long as I have. But I always, and there are tons of podcasts. There's tons of information. There's tons of stuff on stuff. And more stuff.
Everything you can possibly imagine.
Like, what I like about this particular show is that it came from cheese people, mm-hmm. and it's run by cheese people, and yeah. it's for cheese people,
yeah.
and people to listen to. So we can talk about these things, mm-hmm. but we work with the stuff, so we can. But I don't go around holding up every piece of cheese that I come and trying to tell everybody how super important it is, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's fucking so annoying.
Might get a little tiring.
Annoying,
it might know? Get tiring.
And I've seen that, you know, that attitude through my time sometimes be with waxes and wanes, you know?
I think also the thing that, thinking back on my own career in the cheese industry and even before I worked in cheese, this podcast, you know, you mentioned it's free learning. It felt like a graduate degree in cheese.
Oh.
I mean, the amount of information that I've learned from listening to this very show over the years, Greg Blaze, is pretty remarkable. And I
say the same thing.
I do wonder, you know, I find myself wondering, who are you, listeners?
Right.
Are you all brand new, like I once was? Have you followed the show over the years? You know, I think it'll be really fun. Part of what I'm looking forward to is actually finding a way to get to understand who the listeners are a bit more.
Sure.
And I think, you know, I have my theories about whether or not it's people new to the industry who find out about the show or long timers who are, you know, hooked for life. But
I think there's both.
I do think there's both as well.
When I was saying in the beginning then what Emily and I tried to do mm-hmm. when we started to work together on the show was to grow the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we helped to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that we have people that listen to us in Hong Kong and
crazy
in Mumbai. And
everywhere,
you know?
I've already told this to you, you know, in the recent weeks, but I was recently in Sweden.
Uh-huh.
And I'll say this because I do think our listeners will get a kick out of this. And you and I had just discussed this new role, and we were kind of in the works of me coming on onto the team. And I go to Sweden, and I'm in Stockholm, and I go to a market where they're selling cheese.
Yeah.
And I meet a cheesemonger who listens to the show.
Yeah, that's great.
He said, "Oh, yeah, Greg Blaze. Do you know him?" And I thought, this is awesome. So I do think it's, you know, listeners, we're talking about you now. And, you know, it's just, you inspire us. And I felt so inspired by the show. And I'm excited to be in the position where I can think more about who's listening and how that inspires me.
That's what you, is that what you're most excited about?
Maybe that's, you know, I hadn't really said that out loud yet, but I do feel most excited about that.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
I also like being here at Roberta's, you know, an excuse to come and eat pizza at Roberta's restaurant once a month is not bad.
Doing the podcast here with the team at Heritage, with Patrick Martins and with Erin Fairbanks when she was here, she and Jack Inslee taught me so much, and I work with David and Viter and Katie and all just the awesome people that work at Heritage. I'm always super proud and humbled to be able to come and that people listen. It's
pretty rad.
And I'm sure that the listeners will be happy that there's somebody else. I'm sure that they're pretty tired of me at this point. So
I don't know about that, Greg. Well, I think also Diane's show has probably widened the scope a bit with the book review focus.
100%.
That's been really an interesting part.
If there's a book about cheese that's out there, Diane has interviewed.
She's talking about it. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And so, she's predates all of us.
Yeah.
Except for Anne.
That's true. Here's a good question. Here's a question for you, Greg.
Oh yeah.
Have you had a radio show before? I know that you have some history in radio.
No, I haven't had a radio show before. I was a journalist, or that's what my degree says.
Right.
But
that's what your degree says.
Sure. There are interviews that I've done that are archived. I graduated from college a long, long time ago.
Hmm.
So there were still divisions of my college called print journalism. That doesn't really exist anymore.
What's that?
Yeah. But I love it. I think I understand the parameters of this.
Yeah. Well, obviously. And you've got the voice.
Right. Yeah. What are you going to do? It's been fun. I'm really happy that you're here with us.
Thanks.
It's
me
great.
Too.
It's
I'm always, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it was always good to have you on the show, and it'll be great for you and I to be able to see where we go from here.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beautiful thing about this show is that we all own it and it all owns us.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. I'm just like happy that I have been a part of it for as long as I have, and that I'll get to continue to do that, and that we get to do it together.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to many great shows in the future.
Right on. So stay tuned next week for both of us, or is it just me again?
Might be just you next week, but soon it'll be both of us.
We're both so busy, we have to divide up the time. No, just kidding. But please, stay tuned, and welcome Elena to the show, and we'll be back next week with more Cutting the Curd. Ciao.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Ever wonder what kind of podcast Julia Child would have made? Probably would have been one where she introduced you to all of her latest discoveries and favorite people. And that's exactly the tradition we're following on Inside Julia's Kitchen, the podcast of the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts. Join me, Todd Shulkin, your host, and the Foundation's Executive Director, as I bring you inside the Foundation's world to meet the bright lights of today's food universe, just as Julia used to do from her own famous kitchen. New episodes air on Heritage Radio Network, Wednesdays at noon Eastern. Listen in.